Okay, our next talk is on testing for differences in Gaussian graphical models, applications to brain connectivity by Eugene Bililovsky, Gael Varroquois, and Matthew Blaschko. And Eugene will give the talk.
Okay. So our work is dealing with the problem of discovering the structure of undirected graphical models from data. And we consider specifically a setting where one has two sources of data generated from an unknown underlying graphs. Now knowing that the graphs are similar, we'd like to identify where they differ using few observations. And specifically, our main contribution is to propose a hypothesis test for testing if a given edge differs in group from one group to another. So there are many application areas where we can find this problem setting, and in this work we are motivating our approach using the problem of comparing amongst different groups the brain connectivity. So this is the graph of interactions between brain regions. So for example, we may want to find where pathologies in the control group where pathology group and control group differ in their brain connectivity. Or we might want to see if a specific relationship differs among the groups. So at the same time, we would like some control for false positives. So in this talk, I'll review Gaussian graphical models and their applications in describing connectivity from fMRI data. I'll focus on the problem of difference estimation and hypothesis testing and propose a method for this setting. Finally, I'll describe the experiments we performed to validate our approach on some simulated and real fMRI data. So in this work, we're focusing on Gaussian graphical models. So these describe interactions of variables in multivariate Gaussians. And a well-known property of these models is that the zeros of the inverse covariance and of the partial correlation give the conditional independent structure of the underlying graphs. So in settings with high dimensions and few observations, estimating these is a challenge. L1 penalties and variance are often used to estimate these graphical models. For example, the L1 penalized maximum likelihood of the inverse covariance or the graphical lasso. Now, Gaussian graphical models can be used to describe and estimate functional connectivity in the brain from fMRI data. And so here we would take a sample's values at different brain regions recorded at different times or across different subjects, and we'd use the covariance matrix to compute a potentially sparse estimate of the underlying connectivity. Now, measuring connectivity is interesting because it is believed to be affected by pathologies such as Alzheimer's or autism. So identifying differences can allow us to better understand these conditions. So in the setting of comparing two groups, we argue that penalizing the differences of the connectivity pattern can be important for accurate estimation from few observations. So we can see this for a number of reasons. First, the anatomical connections in the brain will limit the variation we can observe in the functional connectivity in many cases. Furthermore, in many settings, we can often collect far more control subjects than those of a certain condition. So we should be able to exploit this underlying similarity. Finally, in practice, assigning significance to the difference can be important. So that's why we developed this in the framework of a hypothesis test. So there are several recent works which consider difference estimation in the context of Gaussian graphical models and more general distributions. But these don't have a straightforward way to control for the false positives. In the context of brain connectivity analysis, resampling-based methods have been used to test for differences. And in the literature on high-dimensional inference, p-values and confidence intervals have recently been studied, most notably several methods which allow for characterizing the lasso have been proposed. So these include the covariance test and tests based on the debias lasso, which I will talk about more in the sequel. So as mentioned, estimating Gaussian graphical model structure is often done with L1 penalties. So one classic approach, one such approach is the node-wise regression. So here, given a data matrix X and node set V, we can take a node and regress it on all others, applying a L1 penalty. The non-zeros of this parameter vector will correspond to edges connected to the node. Due to the L1 term, this produces a biased estimate, and this makes it difficult to characterize the distribution of these parameter estimates. So one strategy that's recently proposed is to obtain a debiased estimate, which would allow for testing for the zeros, is to add a term based on the KKD conditions, which corrects for the bias. And so here we would introduce a matrix M, which is multiplied by a subgradient of the regularizer. So if M is close to the inverse covariance in some sense, and the true parameter vector is sparse, it can be shown that this produces an asymptotically unbiased estimator whose distribution is easy to characterize. So several strategies to compute the M have been proposed. So this is just a simple strategy to test for differences, which is to subtract two debiased lasso estimates, and this serves as our baseline. However, we'd like to take advantage of a potentially large number of shared or similar interactions in our graphs, so to increase statistical power. So we propose a joint estimation procedure for the parameters and the debiasing matrices. So we can consider two linear models and diagonal Gaussian noise. Corresponds, for example, to one node and two sources of data. We compute the joint regression estimate where the penalty will have an L1 on the difference and individual parameters. Lambda 1 can control this individual sparsity and lambda 2 the difference. So for the case of interest, brain connectivity, one can, for example, apply a heavy penalty on the difference and a weaker penalty on the individual parameters. And in some, it should be noted, in some literature, this penalty is called the multitask fuse lasso. So as in the case of the lasso, we have a bias where when we compute the difference beta D, we introduce a new difference estimate, beta U, which has a term added to it that attempts to correct for the bias. And so we introduce two M matrices, which are applied to the subgradients of the regularizer. And if we appropriately compute the M matrices and assume a joint sparsity, then we can obtain an unbiased estimate. So expanding out the above expression, we can represent the difference between beta U and the true difference as a random part and the delta, which controls the bias. And if we can make delta asymptotically negligible under the null hypothesis of the edges being equal, we will get a simple Gaussian distribution. So we'll take a closer look at this delta term. So we can expand the bias equation in terms of the difference beta D and the sum beta A of the parameters. And we can further bound this quantity with Holder's inequality to obtain four terms. So the L1 terms here can be bounded using sparsity assumptions, while the L infinity terms can be controlled by choosing appropriately M1 and M2. And specifically, we choose them such that they minimize the variance of the estimator. And this is done by solving a set of quadratic programs that minimize the variance of our new estimator while constraining the L infinity norms shown before. So if we now take several assumptions and conditions, namely that the groups are unbalanced, that the support difference is sparse given few samples, the covariance matrix satisfies some common restrictions, and the regularization parameters and bounds mu1 and mu2 are set within appropriate ranges that we give, then we can say that the bias term will vanish asymptotically. So just to recap the procedure, for each node, we can compute a biased regression estimate, beta 1, beta 2, with a penalty L1 on the difference. We solve quadratic programs to find M1, M2 that minimize the variance of the estimator while keeping the delta negligible. So then we can say that under the null hypothesis, the parameter estimate will have a simple Gaussian distribution, and this can be used to do testing or in multiple correction after. So now I'll talk about the experiments we did. So we performed some experiments on simulated data from two related sources. So here we use the setting with 75 variables and a difference sparsity of 98% and an individual sparsity of 80% on the graph edges. So one variable had 800 samples drawn while another was varied. And we use a significance of 5%. As baselines, we use 2D bias lasso and a simple approach called the projected ridge regression. So we found that our method and the baseline methods all result in false positives below the desired level, which can be seen in noted in the table. Our test, however, was more powerful, especially in the low sample setting. So now we consider a real data setting using the ABI data sets. So this is a relatively large data set of resting state fMRI data that can be used for studying autism. So we extract 39 regions of interest using a standard dictionary learning technique. And one would like to find the differences in the connectivity patterns amongst the autist and the control group. So in our evaluation, our primary goal was to confirm that the test is well calibrated, meaning that would validate all the assumptions that have gone into it. And we'd also like to show that we can detect more edges at the appropriate significance level. So we rely on permutation testing to do this. So this is a way of computing the p-value by computing the test statistic for permutations of the test condition label, which in this case is the control in autism. So this is an extremely expensive procedure, but it allows us to validate our test that requires only one computation of the test statistic. So we now compare the permutation p-values to the parametric p-values from our test and other tests with the joint assumption. So in the chart, each point is a different edge, can correspond to a different edge. And the x-axis in these graphs show the permutation p-value, and the parametric p-value is given on the y-axis. So ideally, these points should lie on the diagonal, and we would like to be close to that diagonal. We're also primarily interested in behavior at the tail, so that's why we show the low p-value range in the bottom. We can see that in this range, all the methods have p-values primarily above the line, indicating appropriate error control. However, the other two methods we consider give very conservative estimates, while ours finds much more low p-values that lie within the correct error range. So then we did an evaluation of reproducibility. So if we take different subsamples of data, we'd like our detected edges to be the same. So we can see that this method finds more consistently the same edges. So to conclude, we propose the novel test for edge differences in Gaussian graphical models. We show that this test leverages some assumptions about the shared edges structure and sparsity and can work with few observations. And we evaluate the test on synthetic data, and importantly, we empirically show that it has correct error control and finds more edge differences in the real fMRI data. So, yeah, thanks for listening. And if you have some questions, you can email me or talk to me at my poster. And we'll have some code on the link.
If you have questions, please come to one of the microphones.
Hi. Hi, thanks for the great talk. I'd like to ask, how do you adjust for multiple comparisons?
So you can use your favorite method. In this one of the experiments here, there's no. This is just showing each individual edge. But we did do one experiment. It's not here. So we just use FDR, for example.
Okay.
But you can.
Because to my understanding, that the biasing gives only for like one coefficient, not for many.
No, it's for all of them.
Okay, thank you.
Do we have other questions? So I actually have one. So you're using a sort of pseudo-likelihood approach. When you think about individual nodes, we're regressing on neighbors.
Yes.
And in general, that loses some efficiency. Do you have a sense for how much power is lost in your approach by doing that, as opposed to the computationally challenging more joint estimation?
Can you clarify a bit?
Well, just your regression setup is there's approaches that kind of account for the full distribution of normalization constants as opposed to regressing on neighborhoods.
So yeah, we considered those, but it was. I guess it was easier to start with this approach, and then we can expand it to joint estimation. But for finding edges, it's not completely clear that those always work better. Depends on your assumptions.
Okay, let's thank our speaker again.